Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. This is KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, you're logged on to kptz.org. The website is more than just a way to listen to today's radio show. For example, you can find the biographies of all our hosts and DJs. You can listen to podcasts with politicians, and of course, you can listen to today's show at kptz.org. Earlier shows are also online as podcasts. In fact, much of the original programming of KPTZ is currently available online. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as some of the earlier ones that you might have missed. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who is that very solitary guy on a paddleboard way off the shore? Doesn't he realize the water's freezing cold? And who's that couple snuggling up in the corner at Sirens? The rest of the crowd is probably jealous. And then there's the guy on the recumbent bike barreling down the hill into town. Do you think he'll stop at the light by Safeway? This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with people who make up the eclectic mix around these parts. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and farmers, baristas and big shots, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County, amid the deer, the otters, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people, your neighbors, your friends, and particularly the people you don't know yet, but you'd like to meet them. Today, I have two guests, Colleen Swantner and John Shortis. They are the dynamic duo behind Puffin Shoe Repair, tucked into the corner of Uptown behind Sweet Lorette's restaurant. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I always want to start with a fairly simple and straightforward question. Were you born and bred in Port Townsend? Let's start with you, Colleen.
No, I came to Port Townsend. I heard about the town when I was living in Alaska and also when I lived in Hawaii. And so I finally made it here and I fell in love. So I have actually lived here about 35 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a while. Uh-huh. So when you say you heard about it, did it just sort of come up in casual conversation?
Well,
it always intrigues me.
Yeah, I was working in Valdez, Alaska for a couple years, and you just get to know the people you work with, and
right.
Two of the people I was working with had been born here, and they were just telling me that they thought I would fit right in. It's an artist community, a very small community, you know, all the old buildings and by the water and so on. And also in Hawaii, I met someone from here, actually, that was visiting Hawaii, and she's the one that invited me to visit here.
Huh.
So,
and so what kind of work were you doing in Alaska and why?
In Alaska, I was just with some people that went up to work on the pipeline. We went up from Minnesota, got jobs working on the terminal, the pipeline there, and then made some money and moved to Hawaii, some of us. So then I was in Hawaii and I learned a specific kind of yoga that I ended up teaching. I still teach now. And that's what brought me here. Originally, as I was invited to teach a yoga class by Carol Hossie from the Sail Loft.
What is the particular kind of yoga?
It's called Ashtanga yoga, which actually means eight-limbed yoga, so it means a lot more than that particular form, but I think it's a nice name for it. It's a very active, very invigorating form of yoga asana practice.
And John, how did you end up in beautiful Port Townsend?
Well, I was born on the East Coast. Our family moved to New Mexico when I was a teenager, and I spent 20 years there. I met my future wife there. She ended up leaving and coming up to Seattle for a job, and I ended up following her, and we got married. But we were neither of us really city people, so we were looking around for a nice small town to move to. And while I was in Seattle, I went to boat school at Gompers in Seattle Central Community College and learned about boat building and woodworking. When I was finished with that, I looked around and found a job at Admiral Marine Works, which was in Port Townsend back in those days. That was about 1990. So we moved over here. Yeah. She quit her job, which she wasn't all that keen on, in Seattle.
When you were in New Mexico, mm-hmm. That's not a big sailing center.
Well, boats don't just sail. there's other kind of boats.
Okay, so was your what I'm really getting at was your interest something sort of a lifelong interest in boats? Is that
no? Mostly, I wanted to work with my hands, and boats just seemed an intriguing way of making things. I mean, they're really complicated. They have curves and angles, and it's not just putting together boxes. And so I was really intrigued by that. I thought it would be a fun challenge. So that's why I went into learning about boat building, but woodworking in general, too.
Okay, so what year did you move to Port Townsend, then?
1989.
Oh, you've been here a while, then?
A little while.
And did you stay with Admiralty?
I worked there for 5 years, and then they had a lull. And by that time, I was kind of tired of the environment. A lot of fiberglassing and that sort of thing was going on, painting, and it just wasn't all that great an environment to work in. I felt healthy environment. Anyway, there was a lull, and we got laid off for a while, and I just decided not to go back. And just about that time, we had our first child. And something I always wanted to do was be a stay-at-home dad and be a parent. And that's what I ended up doing for the next quite a few years.
Cool. And so your wife then was the breadwinner, I guess is what it's called.
Yes,
and what did she end up doing?
I think initially she volunteered at the food co-op, and then she ended up getting a job there. I think she was assistant produce person initially, and then she became the produce person, and then she became this and that, and she has been there ever since, doing just about every job there over the course of her many years there.
And I would imagine a lot of our listeners know her.
Yeah, they know Deb at the co-op.
Deb at the co-op, okay. But somehow both of you ended at Puffin Shoe Repair. Did you start the business?
Well, I guess I'll answer that. Puffin Shoe Repair was started by Larry Dennison, and then later his brother Rick joined him, and they started it in 1975. Mm-hmm. And Larry told me that actually there was a shoe repair shop before that somewhere up on the hill, you know, coming into town. They started Puffin Shoe Repair and had it for about 10 years. And Larry had actually done an apprenticeship in Oklahoma, I guess, got him started in that field. And then Roger Reichersommer bought the business in 1985. And at that point, it was located uptown where Petals Flowers is now. And then when he was running the shop, I used to visit and say that I was interested in working there. And so I started working with Roger about 14 years ago.
Wow. Uh-huh. Well, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Larry Dennison is actually on the board of directors of KPTZ.
Oh, uh-huh.
So he's well known around here. So I guess he started the barbecue place after that.
Right, right. And he's done a few other things, too.
Yes, I think so.
Yes. And actually, I did stop in when Larry and Rick had the business down on Water Street next to what was then the Town Tavern. And they had a great thing going. They made sandals and they sold boots, I think. And so, but I was always interested in shoe repair because I had studied it right out of high school. And I thought it was
really
a great trade. Yeah.
Why did you like it?
At the time when I graduated high school, you know, it was the Back to the Earth movement then in the early 1970s. And I wasn't ready to go to college, and I wanted to learn a trade. And Minnesota had what I think all states should have now. You could go to a trade school for free until you were 21.
Wow, that's a good deal.
So, yeah, I just looked at all the trades that were offered, and I decided to learn shoe repair. So I went to a shoe repair course in Minneapolis, took the whole school year, and came out with my certificate. But, yeah.
What are the basic skills they teach you in a shoe repair course?
I mean, we learned, I wish I could find the book that I had from that course because it was great. It was the history of shoe making. And then once you knew the construction of a shoe and you knew all the proper names and of all the parts and everything, then once you understood the construction, you would understand how to repair a shoe. And then, of course, you learn all about the different machinery. There's this different stitchers and, you know, the specific kind of shoemaker's hammer and pliers and all that stuff. So mm-hmm. I had my own little toolbox and could do every aspect of it by the end of that course.
But you didn't take it up?
Well, then I was around 19, and I wanted to go see the world, I guess. So I remember saying at the time to myself, well, I'm not going to do this right now, but maybe when I'm about 50. Because a lot of the shoe repair shops were older couples or older people, and I just thought, I'm just not ready to settle in there. And, you know, kind of just like I said, when I was here, I was around 50 when I started working for Roger.
Wow. And so he hired you sort of part-time at first? Is that how it unfolded?
Yeah, I still had children in school. My youngest was in junior high, and I was ready to, you know, take on more work. And so I worked part-time, and I still work part-time, just in the afternoons.
Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. And does Roger still own the Puffin?
No, he sold it to Malcolm Dorn, who owns that whole corner there, which is called Chester's Corner by some. He bought it and then kept John and I on. We were the main ones working there at that time. But Roger was ready to sell. He was around 80 years old. And even though he loves it, and it's a lot of who he is, but he hadn't really been doing the work for a few years, and he was ready to sell.
And so, John, how did you happen to end up at Puffin Shoe Repair? Did you also study it?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I didn't know anything about shoes. I've been working there about going on 4 years now. Like I said, I was a stay-at-home dad, and I was doing woodworking on the side. But I was working out of a shop in my basement, and it didn't get me out of the house very often. And so when my son was in high school, I thought, you know, I didn't need to do something else. And I've always liked working with my hands. And I just saw an ad for the job in the newspaper. The person who was working with Colleen and Roger was getting ready to leave, and they were looking for somebody to replace her. So I applied for the job and got it, and spent about 6 months learning about shoe repair.
Well, so how did you sell yourself?
I told them I liked working with my hands, I liked problem solving, and I knew how to sew.
That sound like all basic basic skills. So, Colleen, you had already been there about 10 years at that point. Were you actively involved in the hiring of John?
Yeah, I was very active. And in fact, I was thinking about buying the business from Roger, and I could see down the road it would just be me and whoever I hired. And it's a very small shop, and you definitely need to pick someone whose personality you can get along with. So I was interviewing people, and my husband actually had worked with John
at Admiral.
Yeah. So when I showed Scott some of the names of the people I had interviewed, and he said, pick that one. You will not be sorry if you hire John. But I knew too from interviewing him that he would be great, because he understands woodworking, which a lot of it is working with glues and putting two surfaces together and knowing that this will work. And so that's a lot of what shoe repair is now. Even in the old days, it was more nails and even wooden dowels. But now it's a lot of just understanding glues and the materials that the shoes are made of. And what I hired him to do is putting on the soles and the heels primarily, and I do the stitching on the uppers, and I work on all the other assorted things with the sewing machine. So I knew that he was very skilled.
You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM on the radio dial, or kptz.org online. The show's called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. This show features some of the fascinating people who live and work in Port Townsend and Jefferson County. Today, my guests are Colleen and John, both from Puffin Shoe Repair in Uptown Port Townsend. Colleen was just starting to tell me about the technology, I guess you'd call it, in shoe repair. I never really thought about it, but apparently shoes have changed dramatically in the past 10 or 15 years. And John, why don't you explain what the changes have been?
Well, there's changes in the construction techniques and changes in the materials that are used. Back in the old days, shoes used to be constructed sort of in layers. You'd have the upper, which was often leather, and then you would have a midsole, which was sewn on to the upper, and that was leather. And then you would have an outer sole, which was either sewn or glued to the midsole, and that was either leather or rubber. And then a heel would be fastened on as a separate piece. Today's shoes are, there's still the upper, which is, again, often leather, but then the sole is often a molded, some kind of rubber or rubber-like material, which is molded on to the upper. Most often is just glued on. Sometimes there's stitching involved, but often it's just glued. And so the main variability in materials is this piece of rubber that is the sole, because companies are always looking for new and different kinds of materials to make this something that wears well, but is soft, is pliable. It all comes down to ease of manufacturing and economics, but it's always a challenge for us to figure out what these materials are, because some of them our glues stick to and some of them our glues don't stick to, and we have to come up with different ways of essentially patching the sole since we can't often replace the whole rubber sole.
So how many different kinds of glue do you use?
I generally use only two or three different kinds of glues. Because a shoe is a compound shape often, it's nice to use a contact cement so you don't have to clamp waiting for the glue to cure. And it's really hard to clamp a shoe. If it has a flat surface, you can clamp that, but often it's a curved surface and it's difficult to clamp that. So that's why the majority of the gluing situations are use a contact cement, because when you stick the two parts together, they stay together.
So what do you mean by contact cement?
Well, contact cement is actually a form of rubber, and you coat both pieces to be glued together. You let the glue dry and the solvents evaporate, and then it is tacky but not wet. And then you put the pieces together, and they're tacky enough that they stick together. And then over the course of the next day or week or something, the rubber really cures hard and it makes a good adhesive.
Well, shoes, you know, I was thinking about it. 20 years ago or so, mostly people wore leather-type shoes. And then the rise of the so-called athletic shoe or running shoe, most of them are not made of leather. I'm not even sure what they're made of.
Well, lots of them are fabric or different kinds of fabrics. Today, they use a combination. They often like to put some leather in there as well for reinforcement mostly, and I guess because it gives more authenticity to the shoe. But that's not really a problem. We can glue up fabric too. It really becomes an issue when we're stretching shoes for people because the leather stretches really nicely and fabrics don't often stretch.
So is a stretching shoe, is that a common request?
Yes, we do a lot of stretching. Actually, I think we do more shoe stretching now than ever before because people these days like to buy their shoes online, and when they get the shoe, they find it doesn't fit as they thought it would.
I assume that many people actually have feet that are slightly different. One is slightly bigger than the other. So can you cope with that problem?
We can stretch an area that needs to be stretched. In fact, the stretchers come, we have these little metal pieces that we can put on if you need to stretch for a bunion or you need to stretch for an area of the foot that's just not fitting in. Yeah, so we can accommodate that. And also what we're doing a lot of now that John is really good at is making lifts. And that is where you have one foot that needs to be a little higher to, you know, you have one side of your body is not the right height, and so you might add a quarter inch lift or a half inch lift. And we're finding a lot of people are sent to us by physical therapists or podiatrists that need to have these lifts put on. John's perfected it.
Wow.
I think.
That's interesting. And what material do you use for the lifts?
It's a lightweight Ethafoam, if anybody knows what that is. It's a lightweight foam material. It used to be called crepe. We want to keep it light so the shoe doesn't get appreciably heavy. And the best way is to sandwich that piece in between the shoe and the outer sole. So we frequently cut the shoe open with a saw and essentially cut the sole off as a thin piece, put the Ethafoam piece in there after shaping it, and then glue the sole back on again. That way the shoe has the same look as the original.
Interesting. So might you do this for just one shoe?
Yes.
Or both?
Usually just for one shoe. Huh? Just for the leg that's shorter.
Well, so what other problems do people come to you with?
Well, some people just want us to make changes. I mean, say on a purse or a bag. There's a lot of people that buy purses. Oh, the handle's too long. The straps don't fit quite right. I need a snap instead of a piece of Velcro. We're changing shoes and purses and bags and things a lot just to accommodate personal preferences. We can take a buckle off a shoe or purse and put on Velcro or lengthen it.
So you don't just deal with shoes.
No, we work on a lot of bags, backpacks, belts,
jackets.
I put zippers in jackets and boots, and we're willing to look at a lot of things. Sometimes we have to put a new handle on a cello case or a violin case, or people bring luggage in sometimes and we figure out how to make little fixes.
Interesting.
So there's a lot of people that have, we don't encourage people to bring in bridles and that kind of thing, but occasionally something will come in from somebody who has, I can't think of the names of these things, but they're like halters and bridles. Some parts of those I can work on. A lot of them are too thick for our machines, but we'll take in what we think we're capable of fixing.
So the horsey set can come to you for repairs
for
as well.
For some things.
Interesting.
And we do a lot of riding boots.
And
we also have boots that come in that don't fit a person's calf. Either we need to put in some more elastic or widen the boot out, or I just took two pair of boots in for someone that they were just swimming in the boots, so they wanted me to bring the tall boots in narrower. So these are the things we can do.
Wow. Now, I've noticed when I've come into the shop that you have a really cool-looking sewing machine there. I guess you have several, but the one out front, is that an antique? What is that?
Well, everybody thinks it's an antique. It's called a patching machine, and there's two of them out front. One has a longer arm on it so that you could put a boot on that and go all the way inside the boot and do some stitching. And the other one is just more for shoes, but they both were probably built in the 1950s, and they're just very well made. Cast iron, almost all metal parts.
They look like they weigh a ton.
They probably do weigh quite a bit, but that's great, because then they're stable, and you're stitching on them, and often you're just going stitch by stitch. So one's a treadle, the other used to be a treadle, and now it has an electric motor, but oftentimes we're just moving them with our hands because you just want to do two or three stitches and know exactly where you're going into the old holes, say, or just into an area that you don't want to mess up on. They're just great, and there's a fellow in Hadlock that can come over and fix our machines, but they don't often need help because we just oil them and clean them.
Solidly built, I guess. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the styles of footwear in Port Townsend. In the time you've been here, has there been a change? What do people wear?
We get our fair share of Birkenstock sandals and shoes in. There's still people that have some from years and years ago, because Birkenstocks can be repaired over and over again. And there's a lot of boots. There's work boots, and there's the women with the dress boots. I have noticed there's more women wearing dress shoes. When I first started 14 years ago, I think there weren't that many women's dress heels that would come into the shop. Some of the older ladies in town were still wearing them, but now I think a lot of younger women are dressing up, so we're getting more of that.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. So the fashionable set is going to dress your shoes. Mm-hmm. Are we talking about high heels here?
Yeah, we do actually a fair number of high heels. They have these little tips on the bottom, which we call dowels. And so we replace those on a regular basis because they tend to wear quite rapidly since they're so small. Yeah, I like working on the high heels.
What's one of the more challenging problems you faced?
Well, shoes that people have let go too long because they love them so much. Then we have to try to rebuild the whole shoe. And there's parts that are meant to be replaced on, like on a dress shoe. It's called the top lift, the part on your heel that you actually wear. And that can be replaced fairly easily. But people don't often look at how their shoes are wearing. And so then they wear through the top lift and down into the heel base. And then sometimes even farther than that. And then it can be a real challenge to build all these pieces back up again and replace them and get it all back together.
Do you ever basically say, no, I can't fix this?
Yeah, there are two reasons for that. One is the shoe has just completely disintegrated in terms of holes. I mean, if it's a leather shoe and it has too many actual tears or holes worn into the leather, it just becomes kind of pointless to try to essentially remake the whole shoe. But the other more common situation we run into is there are certain materials, certain sort of foamed plastics or rubbers that seem to disintegrate over time. And these are on the molded on type soles. At some point, for some reason, they just start to crumble and disintegrate. And it's not something we can fix because we can't replace this whole molded on sole because there's 1,000 different sizes and 1,000 different designs. And we can't stock all of that. I don't even know if we could get them. At any rate, when that happens, there's nothing we can do. We can't glue to crumbling material because it would just come off again.
So you're saying the material itself just crumbles?
Yes. We've heard that if it stays in a confined space, space for a long period of time, for months. So if people take their shoes and just stick them in the back of the closet or in the shoebox and they just sit there for many months, the material will just disintegrate.
Wow. So you go and you open a box in the back of your closet and it's all crumbled?
We've heard many stories where people put on their shoes that they haven't worn for a while, and the next thing they know, they're leaving a trail of black debris behind them.
That would be pretty upsetting.
Yes,
very true.
And we're talking about expensive shoes here, too.
Yeah.
Some of the reputable, I won't name any brands, really, okay, but, you know, some very expensive shoes that people were counting on putting on when they're going out to a dressy occasion, and this has happened. And even if they're not put in a box in the back of your closet, there seems to be a point in time when they've reached the end of their lifetime.
Wow. Okay, now you're dealing with the public day after day. What are the more challenging types of customers that you face?
Well, I'd say most of our customers really appreciate what we are offering there. You know, in fact, I said recently, no job too small. You know, there's a lot of people that will come in, they just need us to punch some holes in a belt or put a few stitches in something, and they really appreciate us and often thank us for being there. But occasionally you'll have a customer, I suppose, that has their own idea of what they want and it is not properly conveyed, or, you know, I try to tell them back what I think they want. And, mm-hmm. you know, I suppose it's in any profession, there's some people that no matter what you do, you can't please them. So that would probably be the customer that's the most difficult.
Is shoe repair a seasonal business?
Yeah, it is. The fall is probably our busiest time, when people are either bringing their summer shoes that have worn out or their boots that they realized when they first go to wear them need some attention before the winter starts. So the fall's our busiest time. Spring tends to be fairly busy too. Again, people getting ready with their summer shoes and their sandals and all of that. Top of the summer seems to be the quietest time because everybody leaves Port Townsend.
What do you mean?
Off on vacations, and so they're not thinking about having their shoes dealt with.
They're not dancing barefoot in the park.
It gives us a time to take a break, too.
Well, that's good. Well, believe it or not, we're just about out of time here. I want to thank you both for being on the show. I also want to thank the man in the control room, our editor, John McPherson. He's the one who makes us sound good and takes out all those awkward little pauses or whatever. And I want to thank our program director, Larry Stein, and chairman of the board, Robert Ambrose. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis, and my guests today are both from Puffin Shoe Repair in Uptown, Colleen Swantner and John Shortis. Thank you for listening to the show, and please stay tuned to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.